Well, good afternoon. I also share my gratitude for you attending the session this afternoon. It's the last afternoon session of the last day of the conference, so you're the hardcore conference attendee, so I really appreciate you being here. Again, my name is Donald Warren. I'm originally from a small town called Kyle, South Dakota, on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. Anyone ever been to Kyle, South Dakota? Wow.
I'm from North Dakota.
And you've actually been to Kyle, South Dakota? So you're the one. Okay, very good. Yeah. Yeah, so my version of rural is much more rural. The closest city to Kyle, South Dakota would be Rapid City, South Dakota. It's about 100 miles away. So no large medical centers and certainly less access to services. And I am also a family physician, and I've worked with a number of tribal communities across the nation. And I've worked for a long time with the Gila River Indian community in Arizona. And they are well known in the public health arena because they have the highest rate of type 2 diabetes in the world. They now have 50% of the population over age 30 has type 2 diabetes, just remarkable prevalence. And what I saw in my own medical care, trained as a family doctor, is that I rarely saw a patient with diabetes who did not also have depression or anxiety or some other mental health consideration. And one of the things that I saw quite frequently was diabetes coupled with depression and then self-medication with alcohol. Does alcohol worsen your blood sugar, which worsens your depression, which worsens your alcohol intake? So we have this triad of chronic disease, mental health considerations, and a lot of self-medication with things like alcohol and other substances. So I became very interested and committed to this topic early in my professional career, and I was very happy and honored to serve as a co-principal investigator on what is called the South Dakota Health Survey. And that's what I'll be describing today, specifically the mental health and substance use prevalence, health service usage, and barriers to care in the state of South Dakota. So I'm originally from South Dakota, but I now work in North Dakota at North Dakota State University. So I made it all the way across the border to North Dakota. So just by way of introduction, I'll be talking about these factors. Research on urban and rural disparities, particularly in mental health and substance use conditions, is inconsistent, and we don't have a lot of data available looking at those disparities. And it's a huge consideration in South Dakota. We assessed disparities in health condition prevalence and access to care in the largely rural state of South Dakota, and we did have to come up with our own definitions that I'll talk about in terms of what is an urban center as compared to the rural centers. And it's important to keep in mind, in the state of South Dakota, the total population is about 900,000 people. So there are less people in the entire state of South Dakota than there are in Chicago, for example. So we have our own definitions of urban that we use. So the goal was to use community-level data to inform policy and service development, and understanding that with less access, we tend to see more disparities in mental health conditions. And again, as a primary care doctor, untreated mental health conditions are having a significant impact on chronic disease as well. So we need to have a stronger focus in public health on addressing these issues. In terms of how this survey was designed, we had a health needs assessment survey, and we looked at prevalence of behavioral health disorders, both by asking for self-reported behavioral health disorders as well as screening tools. So we used validated screening tools for depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, and alcohol misuse. And we had self-reported questions on health service usage and barriers to care, including issues like distance and cost, and then other demographic characteristics. So we knew that we would get some response by way of mailing out surveys, and we used the U.S. Postal Service to get randomized addresses throughout the state of South Dakota, and we wanted to ensure that we had each county represented in the sample. So we sent out the survey initially with a $5 bill. There have been studies that show a simple incentive like a $5 bill actually increases your response rate. But we knew that we wouldn't have everyone respond to that. So we did have a second mailing, not with the money this time, and then a follow-up phone call. We were able to get those data to communicate with people. And people had the option of either filling out the paper survey or doing it online or on the telephone. Now, we also knew we had other barriers. Coming from an American Indian community, we have significant challenges, not just with rurality, but also with poverty. We have a lot of housing shortages, so we have multifamily homes that are not designed to be multifamily homes, but quite often we have a large number of people living in substandard housing. So how do we identify the head of that household if there's multiple families? How do we actually identify people who may not have a physical address? Many of our community members have a post office box but no physical address. And we also have semi-homeless challenges as well, where people live basically couch surfing wherever they can find a place to stay. And that's very common in our rural impoverished reservation communities. So we knew we had to do in-person surveys as well. So we did hire and train community members to become research assistants and help participate in getting the survey results completed. And we had formal approval from 7 of the 9 reservation communities in South Dakota. So unprecedented in terms of participation. So we initially identified over 17,000 households, and we had 7,675 responses. So a total response rate of 48%, and that included over 520 American Indian respondents. So how did we define rural versus urban? Because we have unique considerations in South Dakota. And we looked at the RUCA, which is rural-urban community areas, if you're interested in looking at how we define 10 levels of population density in the U.S. That's available online if you wanted to look that up under RUCAs. And we used 4 categories. Urban was metropolitan cores of 50,000 plus. And in the state of South Dakota, there's only 2 cities that actually qualify. One is Rapid City, South Dakota. The other is Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Then for rural, our definition was micropolitan cores and commuting flow to population centers of 2,500 to 50,000. Then isolated communities are under 2,500, which we have quite a few of in the state of South Dakota. And then our reservations as well. So the Indian reservations were looked at separately also. So in terms of the participants, I think we had a very good representative sample in the South Dakota Health Survey. You can see the age is quite consistent with census population in terms of age groups. And again, it was only adults, 18 and older. More females than males. As I look at the data, that's not unusual in statewide surveys for some reason. Men don't participate quite as well as women do. For race and ethnicity, one of the things that we were very happy about is that we did intentionally oversample the American Indian populations, and we came very close to the census population. There's close to 11% of American Indians, or 11% of the population is American Indian in South Dakota, and you see we had 9.3% participation in our sample. And then you can see the numbers in terms of urban, which I defined for you, then rural, isolated, and reservation populations. So not all the American Indians were on reservations. We did have urban Indians as well. So in terms of mental health screens, what we found is that people who lived on reservations for screening purposes had higher prevalence of depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress. And again, this is what we screened for using screening tools like the PHQ and other screening tools that are validated. So we can see there is a disparity in terms of higher screening for mental health conditions, including depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress in the reservation communities in South Dakota. So you can see those numbers are between 6 and 10%. Now, what was very interesting is that we also asked the question, has a doctor ever told you that you have depression, or has a doctor ever told you that you have anxiety? And you can see those numbers are a little bit higher. So we believe that perhaps we have some people who have depression that's treated, or maybe they had depression in the past and have now recovered from it, but you can see the numbers there. So in terms of being told that you have a particular condition, for example, look at post-traumatic stress disorder. We do see much higher prevalence in the reservation areas. As part of this study, I'm not reporting it here because we reported it yesterday, actually, we looked at adverse childhood experiences, and the ACE disparities, adverse childhood experiences disparities, were just tremendous for the American Indian population. Every one of the 10 ACE domains were significantly higher for American Indians compared to the non-Indian population, and we believe that's probably at the root of much of the PTSD disparity. In terms of alcohol use, it's quite fascinating when we look at the trends of alcohol use in American Indian populations. And we do have significantly higher prevalence of severe alcohol misuse among American Indians. And as a result, we see a lot of morbidity and mortality associated with that. However, what's kind of a little known fact, and we showed it in our data set as well, is that in the American Indian population, while we do have more people who have severe alcohol misuse, we also have the largest percentage of people who don't drink at all. So complete abstaining from alcohol is much higher, even nationally, for American Indians. And I think that's because We see the devastation of alcohol in many of our communities, and as a result, many people choose to not touch a drop of alcohol. So when I look at the data, we tend to say we have the highest prevalence of severe alcohol misuse, highest prevalence of morbidity and mortality. We should also be saying American Indians have the highest prevalence of sobriety in the nation, because it's true. So we can focus on the negative or focus on the positive, and how we use these data is quite important because we also have a lot of stigma associated with those numbers as well. So you can see for alcohol misuse, we tend to have a U-shaped curve for American Indians, a lot of abstainers and a lot of severe misuse, whereas in the non-Indian population, it's more like a bell curve where we have a lot of social drinkers and few abstainers and a few people who are undergoing severe misuse. In terms of perceived need for treatment, 98.1% of respondents who screened positive for substance use did not perceive a need for care. Isn't that fascinating? So over 98% of people who screened positive had no self-perception of a need for care. And I think that's part of our challenge in public health, right? If people don't perceive a need for intervention or a need to treat, how do we link people to appropriate services? So I think it's important to understand these patterns and self-perception of need for treatment. And about 64% of respondents who screened positive for a mental health condition did not perceive a need for care. So we have higher prevalence of many mental health conditions than we might be aware of. And within that, the disparity within the disparity, so to speak, is that people don't even perceive a need for treatment, even though they're screening positive for some of these mental health conditions. Another area that was fascinating but not surprising is that when we look at access to a primary care provider in the reservation communities, significantly less access to primary care. And nationally, the Indian Health Service is terribly underfunded and understaffed. So not surprisingly, in a state like South Dakota, where we depend on the Indian Health Service for most of our primary care, we do have less access than the rest of the population. And again, these data are being used to advocate for more resources and more services. In terms of hospital utilization for mental health and substance use, you can see for mental health conditions using an emergency room, much higher in the reservation communities. And the challenge there is that not only do we have less primary care providers in medicine, we also have less behavioral health providers. So many of the things that could be handled in an outpatient setting, in an appropriate behavioral health setting, are not provided because we just simply don't have the providers. So people wind up using the emergency room. Do we get the most effective mental health treatment in the ER? Or cost-effective, for that matter? So it's more expensive and less effective, but that's one of our big challenges that we're facing. And you can see similar patterns for substance use in the emergency room as well. The main reasons given for not receiving mental health care, you can see cost was a factor. Availability in the reservation communities was the most significant factor. If you don't have mental health providers, you don't have a behavioral health system, you barely have enough primary care doctors, obviously simply access to these services is a big challenge. So one of the challenges we face, we have the highest rates of things like suicide as well among American Indians, and it's untreated conditions. So there are things that we could do in the public health sector to prevent some of these issues, but also to link people to those services that are desperately needed. Logistical reasons and transportation is a big challenge, particularly for the reservation communities. There's also stigma or fear of using services. It's not just a reservation issue, but in rural communities, one of the challenges that we face is the sense of need for privacy. And if we have our own neighbors working at the behavioral health center, do we risk losing privacy around these issues? Because if we do have access, it's going to be people from that local small community. So many people choose to go without services because of those considerations as well. So just fascinating outcomes. And we do have, in addition to the quantitative data, we do have a qualitative study that we'll be publishing as well to find out why some of these conditions are existing. So in terms of the key findings, similar prevalence of mental health conditions across urban, rural, and isolated areas, but much worse circumstances in the reservation communities. There are access problems in isolated communities and reservation communities, not surprisingly. High inpatient and emergency department utilization for mental health conditions, particularly in the reservation communities, and low self-reported need for mental health or substance use treatment. So there's much work to be done, and I'd love to see this type of a study repeated in other states, including North Dakota. And I know we have a speaker from Indiana, probably need to do something similar to this as well. So just finally, in conclusion, focusing on improving access to care in isolated and reservation communities has to be our next step. How can we use the data to advocate for more resources? We don't want to just have manuscripts that we're publishing. We actually want to link this to policy and programming. So we have to look at cost barriers. Certainly increasing insurance coverage would help. South Dakota has not expanded Medicaid. I think that would help us tremendously. Excuse me. We need to do a better job of integrating mental health and substance use treatment at the primary care level. In South Dakota, we have a Medicaid system for medical care and a separate Medicaid system for behavioral care, and they're not well integrated, unfortunately. And we should be improving telehealth. There are good studies that show the value of telepsychiatry that are effective. We should be doing that and, to a much greater degree. And then addressing gap and perceived need for treatment and educating people about the fact that there are treatments available that are effective to address mental health conditions, and we should try to reduce stigma and encourage people who need these services to go ahead and pursue those services. And thank you all very much. That's our contact information, and at the end of the three presentations, happy to answer questions. Thank you.